Reading from Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Part 1, Chapter 2, these are the limbs of sadhana bhakti. This is verse 195. Arto dvidatmas shabdasya pandit airu papadyate. Deya hantas param kaischit. Deha kaischen mamatmabak. Rupa Goswami Pad says, the wise have said that the self and self-dedication or atmanavedanam is of two kinds. Some say the dedication of one's ego is atmanavedanam. Others say dedication of one's bodily attachments and of such that is related to the body is self-dedication. So we read that yesterday. Two types of atmanavedanam. So dedication of one's ego is described here. Bapu radishu yopi kopi va gunato syani yata tata vida tadiyam tavapada padmayo rahamad yava maya samarpita. So this is a prayer by Yamunacharya. He's describing this principle of Atmanavedanam, dedicating one's ego to the Lord. This is by Yamunacharya. O Lord, I dedicate myself completely to you, even though this self may be now either engaged in the physical body as a human being or in heaven in a form of a demigod, owing to some punya karma, or whatever condition I may be found in. On this very day, I offer myself at your lotus feet. Jiva Goswami says, according to the various theories, whatever may be, quote, I, in its essential nature, to dedicate oneself, whether misconceiving oneself as a man or as a demigod or as anything, one's egoism, one's sense of identity or self-identity. If one decides, on this very day I will dedicate myself, my identity, to the lotus feet of the Lord, this is called Atmanavedanam. Vishnu Chakravarti observes, O Lord, because of my past actions and qualities, if I am born as a bird, beast, man, or demigod in heaven, in such births, in whatever condition it may be, whether in good health or physically mutilated, this ego I have, I offer to you on this very day. So these are prayers of submission and offering one's identity or ego. What is the self? The self is our very identity. Now this is dedication of the body. Because Atma means the self, or the body, the mind, the ego. So this is Deho Bhakti Viveke. Vivek means discrimination. Vivek. Discrimination. Or dedication, says here. Chintam Kuryana Rakshaya Yar Vikritasya Yata Pasho Tatarpayan Haro Deham Virame Dasya Rakshanat. This is a scripture called Bhakti Vivek. In one scripture called Bhakti Vivek, Rupa Goswami is quoting, just as one does not have to worry about the protection and care for an animal which has been sold, similarly, one does not have to worry about how he will be looked after once he dedicates his body and soul to the feet of Lord Hari. So this is often told, that we sell ourselves to the Lord. When an animal is sold to another master, once you sell that domestic animal, you sell your cow to another master, another owner, then you don't have to worry about feeding that cow or protecting that cow, that will all be done by the new owner. So Atmanivedana means, Krishna, I'm dedicating myself to you. I'm throwing myself at your feet. I'm surrendering myself to you. I'm dedicating myself to you. I'm a sold-out animal. Put a rope around my neck and take me wherever you want, because now I'm not going to worry about my maintenance. Rakshishyatiti vishvaso gopachitre varanam tata. Gopta. Gopachitre varanam tata. One has believes that Krishna is my maintainer. He's going to maintain me. So in the Gaudiya Math Bhakti Santa Saraswati, his brahmacharis, he had them wear, they would all wear kurta and dhoti, and they would wear a scarf around their neck, usually out of cotton. It wasn't really, chadar would be something different. But they would, and even the sannyasis also wear in the Gaudiya Math. They have their uttariya, and then they have around their neck, they always have some, maybe you've seen pictures of different sannyasis. They always have some scarf. Looks like a scarf, but it's just some cloth around their neck. And Bhakti Sananda Saraswati says, this is a symbol of humility. That this, like if you get some animal, usually tie a rope around the neck of the animal, and then, okay, come, a horse or cow or bull or whatever. Of course, they tie it to the nose also. So this cloth that they wear around their neck, it's actually the... You know, this is the symbol of humility. They should always keep their head bowed down. My guru is pulling me by this cloth around my neck. So you'll see, even the senior most devotees in Gaudiya Math and different missions, like Bhakti Rakshak Sridhardev, he always had some cloth around his neck. And even Bhakti Vinata Narayan Maharaj has always, usually, some cloth, and all his followers. So I remember some of the ISKCON leaders, they got involved. The Gaudiya Math, so even today Shiva Maharaj, he still wears his cloth. I mean, maybe you've seen pictures of him. He has a cloth around his neck usually, besides the uttariya. And that he picked up from Narayan Maharaj. Many people don't know the background of it, but some do. He liked the idea, the symbology of it and the meaning of it. That I'm a sold-out animal. I'm really like an animal, like a domestic animal. And animals are usually very stupid. They're very slow. They're very stubborn. And they only perform any work or action if you beat them. You beat them with a stick and give them some command. Ho, ho, go, right, left. So the disciple feels he's like that. He's slow, he's lazy, he's stubborn. And he has to be beaten by the spiritual master's hard words to do something. So this is just saying here that this is what Rupa Goswami is quoting. And then this is verse 198. Dushkaratvena virale dve sakyatma nivedane keshan chideva dairanam labete saranarhatam. Because we're talking about dasyam, then sakyam, and now atma nivedanam. So, as both sakya, which means intimate, friendly feelings for the Lord, aroused by an intense and spontaneous longing to have such feelings, and the quality of Atmanivedan, complete dedication of one's ego and body and soul to the feet of the Lord, they are very, very rare and difficult. It is only a very few deserving and qualified persons with ever-deepening faith that are found to possess these qualities as a result of their spiritual practices. We were mentioning that the other day, that although these are nine limbs of devotion, and this principle of Atmanivedanam is often given, that gopis of Vrindavan are the perfect examples of Atmanivedanam. They surely gave everything. Their minds were totally mad for Krishna. They were seeing Krishna everywhere and enacting Krishna's pastimes, and one gopi was becoming another gopi in the separation from Krishna. So they were so much given to Krishna. They were totally Atmanivedanam. It's described, the acharyas described, that there's one thing to be selfless. Someone, he works very hard. Oh, he Mother Teresa was a selfless worker for the downtrodden and the poor. She was a great humanitarian, and she was honored with the Nobel Peace Prize. And everyone's heard of Mother Teresa in Calcutta. So she was considered to be somewhat selfless, but at the same time, she was aware of who she was. She knew that she's Mother Teresa. She knew that she's a Christian person, whatever, nurse or whatever to call her, nun or something. And she was helping people, and she was quite aware of who she was and what she was doing and how she was going about it. So she was selfless in a sense, but she did not forget herself. So the gopis are described as not only selfless, in other words, selfless as opposed to selfish. Selfless means that always caring for others, dedicated to others. The gopis are described as self-forgetful. Like Mother Teresa was absorbed in helping people and selflessly sacrificing her time and her energy and her love and everything to help others. But she never forgot who she was. And she never became the poor people. She served the poor people food and clothing and medicine and held them in her arms and held their hands in the hospital and comforted the sick and spoke nice words to the dying and encouraged people to have faith in God. And she did so many good deeds for humanity and the cause of her religious and humanitarian pursuit. But she never thought, I am this poor person. I am this leper, I am this orphan, I am this suffering person, this is me. So the gopis are described as self-forgetful. That there is so much Atmanivedanam, obviously Atmanivedanam means dedicating one's body, Atma, one's mind, Atma, one's very ego and identity, one's very existence to Krishna. So certainly the gopis are dedicating their minds to Krishna. They're dedicating their bodies to Krishna in conjugal vilas, rati vilas, the most intimate exchange. They offer their everything they have, body, mind, words, everything. But over and above that, the fullest zenith of definition of Atmanivedanam, the gopis become self-forgetful. They become so much tanmay and one with Krishna, they forget who they are. I'm not Vishakha Sakhi. I'm not Lalita Sakhi. I'm not a Sakhi. Sakhi, look, I'm Krishna. And you're Kaliya. What are you doing, Kaliya? Get out from here. You come to poison this river. And then she stands on the head of another gopi and says, I will dance on your head. Get out from here. Another gopi says, oh, look, come, gopis. I am Giridhari. Don't be afraid of Indra. Come under my... And she holds her lingra? What's this thing above the top? Dresses lingra? She holds her chuni over her head. She holds her chuni and says, come under the shelter of Govardhan Hill. Don't worry, I won't drop it. I'll hold it on my pinky finger. I am Giridhari. See how I'm standing. So she completely forgets who she is and completely identifies 100%, 100% that I am Krishna. So this is the extent of their Atmanivedanam. No one is a greater example of Atmanivedanam than the Braja Gopis. So this, even this basic level, what to speak of the gopis, but to be at this level of dedicating one's body and mind and words to Krishna is very, very rare. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, Archanam, Vandanam, Dhanadasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam. So generally we stay at the level of Shravanam and Kirtanam for a long time. How many years one can engage in hearing and chanting before remembrance comes? True remembrance of Krishna, where one remembers Krishna's form and qualities spontaneously. Not so easy. So when we talk about Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam, then we're actually, also Atmanivedanam is equated with Madhurya Bhav. Dasyam is Dasya Bhav, Dasya Rati. Then Sakyam is Sakya Rati, like the coward boys. And then this Atmanivedanam. This is the gopis, Madhurya Bhav. So this means that these three last stages of the nine limbs of devotion, which are included in the 64 limbs which we're discussing, Dasyam, Sakyam, Atmanivedanam, These are actually ruttis, or permanent devotional mellows. So until one comes to the level of bhav, then he can't experience these limbs of devotion. So this is really what's being said here. So it's very, very rare. Jiva Goswami says that self-dedication atmanivedanam is rare only because it is difficult to dedicate oneself completely to the Lord. Not only that, but sakya is rare both because it's very difficult to attain and because of its superb feelings for the Lord, irrespective of any scriptural guidance. If atmanivedanam, self-dedication, is also enriched by association of intense feelings for the Lord, then it becomes rare in two ways. Of these two forms of atmanivedanam are self-dedication. Dedication of one's I and dedication of one's attachment for the body and all that is associated with the body illustrates the complete dedication. This English is not very clear. Jiva Goswami points out the difference between atmanivedanam and sharanagati. This is very interesting. Because we have sharanagati, six limbs of surrender, then we say atmanivedanam is also dedication. So what's the difference between atmanivedanam and sharanagati? So sharanagati means to take shelter of the Lord. Sharanagati means to accept the acceptance of the Lord as one's protector. And atmanivedanam means making oneself the possession of the Lord. So atmanivedanam is more accelerated or more intense form of sharanagati. In sharanagati, you say, oh, the Lord is my protector. I accept the Lord is my protector. I have no other protector. But you may not have, although it's called surrender, taking shelter. Sharanagati means sharan, shelter. So I accept the Lord as my protector, but I may not have this mamta or have this ego or identity that I am his. I am his possession. I am under his complete control, and he can maintain me or break me, make me or break me, feed me or starve me. So there's quite a difference. Like everybody in Vrindavan is Sharanagati. They're all taking shelter of Krishna, right? When they're in trouble, when Nanda Maharaj is being swallowed by Vidyadhara, the demigod who became a python, and that all the Brijbasis were lighting sticks and logs and trying to burn the snake and make him let release Nanda Baba from his massive jaws. And Nanda Baba was crying out, Nandulal, Nandulal, la 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 la. So then Krishna came and he put his foot on that serpent and killed him and then liberated that demigod. Vidyadhara came out. Vidyadhara is actually a class. It's a class of demigods, like Gandharvas, but there's also individual Gandharvas. It's like saying human, Manush. You're Manush, we're Manush, means human being. So Vidyadhara's particular, there's Vidyadhara's, there's Gandharvas, there's Charanas, there's Siddhas. They all have different descriptions of what their bodies are made of and what they look like. There's Kimpurushas. Hanuman was a Kimpurusha. He had a body like man, but something like monkey also. Kimpurusha. Kimpurush means what kind of man is this? Kimpurush. Purush means man. And Kim means what? So when people see, they go, wait a minute, this is a man or a monkey? And he's like speaking Sanskrit, but he's so hairy and has kind of an ugly face, but he has two hands and he has four hands. And his feet are two hands, like a monkey has four hands. So, this is the point. Jiva Goswami says, what is the difference? One is self-dedication, one is self-surrender. In self-surrender, sharanagati, one considers oneself being under the protection of the Lord. That is, considers oneself to be completely subservient to the Lord and to be under his protection. While in atmanivedanam, self-dedication, one offers one's I, his body, and all his attachments related to the body with or without an intense feeling of intimacy for the Lord. As regards atmanivedanam, enriched by intimate feelings for the Lord, one may take the example of King Ambarish, 9th canto, chapter 4, verse 18 through 20. King Ambarish engaged his mind in meditating. Well, that's that verse. Savai Mana Krishna Padara Vindyor, Vajam Shivai Kunta Gunana Narayane. Ambarish engaged his mind in meditation on the lotus-like beautiful feet of the Lord Sri Krishna. his faculty of speech in singing the glories of the Lord, his two hands in cleansing the temple of the Lord, his ears in listening to discourses on the divine events of the Lord of his life. Sri Krishna. He, Ambarish, engaged his eyes in seeing the temple of Lord Mukunda, and his sense of touch in touching the sacred body of pure devotees of the Lord, his sense of smelling and smelling the sweet fragrance of tulsi leaves offered to the Lord, his tongue in tasting the food offered to the Lord, and etc. And his feet in traveling on foot to the sacred place of pilgrimage associated with the Lord, his head bowed at the feet of Lord Hari, and all his desires employed for being blessed with the service of the Lord. The king did not engage his senses for any earthly pleasures. That's quite exemplary. King Ambarish, they say he... Bali Maharaj is the example of Atmana Vedana. And King Ambarish Maharaj is the example of one who engaged in all nine forms of service. So he's given us example. As regards Atmana Vedana, enriched with feelings for the Lord. So someone might say, what are the nine limbs of devotion? So we say Atmana Vedana. So generally they say that who is the example of Atmana Vedana? That's Bali or is it Ambarish? Usually I think they say Bali. He surrendered, but Ambarish would engage in all the nine limbs, right? So Bali Maharaj gave his head at the feet of the Lord. But here it's saying, Jiva Goswami is citing this example of Atmana Vedana is actually Ambarish Maharaj. So because you can see in the 11th canto the Lord describes Atmana Vedana. Doesn't say where, but like that. And then in the 10th canto it's Queen Rukmini. It's described how she dedicated herself to Krishna with the most intimate feelings for the Supreme Lord as her eternal divine consort. Once before they were married, Rukmini wrote her famous letter to the Lord. So, love letters are very old fashioned. Love letters have been going on for centuries. Ladies writing letters to boys and boys writing letters to girls. Of course, it wasn't so much acceptable behavior for a member of the royal order to write a love letter. But she was at her wit's end. Her father was about to bequeath her to, or betroth her, to Shishupal, I believe. And she didn't really want that at all. So she wrote a letter to Krishna and sent it with a trusted Brahmin messenger. In those days, you could trust Brahmins. Nowadays, I'm not so sure. But she sent this letter with the Brahmin messenger. And the letter said this, O beloved, O great one, I look upon thee as my divine husband, and I have therefore dedicated myself completely to you. Do please come from Dwarka and graciously accept me as your queen. So this is also Atmana Vedana, Rukmini's Atma, or dedication to Krishna. Similar examples of self-dedication with intimate, friendly feelings and affection for the Lord can be found elsewhere in scriptures. So this is offering of one's dear objects. Nija Priya Upaharanam Ekadashi. So Priya Upaharan, Nija. Those things that are very dear to us, we should offer to the Lord. Of course, there's nothing more dear than our own selves. Offering of one's dear objects. Krishna tells Uddhava in 11th canto of Bhagavatam, this is number 50 of 64 limbs of devotion, it's number 50. So in Srimad Bhagavatam 11.11.41, Krishna tells, Yadyadishtatamam loke yachchati priya Priyamatmanaha tatta nirvedya yanmayam taranantyaya kalpate. If objects which are very much desired and which are very dear to a person are offered to me, then such gifts bear permanent fruits. That's like somewhere along the line, back in the old days in Vrindavan, there was one great devotee of the Lord, I forget his name, but someone gave him a wristwatch. It was about some time ago, the days of wristwatches, 100 years or 200 years, whenever they first started with wristwatches, 100 years ago. So he thought, oh, this is a very wonderful, good object. I should give to Govindaji. Govindaji is his Lord. So that was the only wristwatch in India, or maybe in India. I mean, certainly in Vrindavan. And he's a very wealthy person. He came to India with the first wristwatch. Now, of course, they're everywhere. So he thought, I should give this to Govindaji. So he came to Vrindavan and gave that wristwatch to Govindaji. And Govindaji's, you know, he's playing his flute and he's wearing a wristwatch. And so, he went to Jaipur. He went to Jaipur and offered to Govindaji there this wristwatch. That's very rare. I don't know if it's the same wristwatch, but even today Govindaji wears a wristwatch. And we go to Vrindavan, and because Vrindavan Didi is the same Govindaji appearing in Vrindavan, he also has a wristwatch. So I wonder if they have the same time on their wristwatches in Jaipur time and Vrindavan time. First Vrindavan time is Nitya Lila. It never ends. So maybe Jaipur, they have to rewind it once in a while. But Krishna is watching Vrindavan as it goes on eternal time in the spiritual world. So this is offering things that are very dear to you, very dear object, even your wristwatch you can offer to the Lord. And it's quite amazing when you first take darshan of Govindaji, the famous beloved deity of Rupa Goswami, who is perfect from his waist to his neck, or something like this, and Gopinath is perfect from his neck to his head, and I forget, there's a story like this, and Madan Mohan is perfect from his feet to his waist, or something like this. I think it was like that, and then they showed Bajranav's mother, what's her name, I forget, Uttara, they said, you saw Krishna, you had darshan of Krishna. You know, Parikshit's mother, I believe. Parikshit's mother, Uttara. So you saw him, what did he look like? And she saw Govindaji, and then she saw Madan Mohan. She said, yes, he looks like Krishna up to his waist, his legs three bending, it looks like Krishna. Then Uttara went to see Govindaji, or Gopinath, I forget which one. Gopinath. And Gopinath looks like Krishna. From his very thin waist, his waist like a lion. Gopinath has a very thin waist and a very broad chest. So Gopinath, the Murti of Gopinath, that my grandson, or great-grandson, whatever it is, Bajranav, carved, he also looks like Krishna, because I saw Krishna. Then they showed the Murti, because these Murtis were carved by Bajranav 5,000 years ago. And then they took Uttara, they said, listen, the last Murti that we have here is Govindaji. So we want to see if you can see any resemblance of Govindaji to Sakshat Hare Krishna, whom you directly saw with your own eyes. So then they unveiled the deity of Govindaji before the, or maybe after, whatever, the initiation, installation. And when she saw the face of Govindaji, she put her chunari over her face and she looked down. And she felt too much shy. And they said, what is wrong? She said, oh, this face, this is Krishna. This face of Govindaji is Sakshat Krishna. And I feel shy to look at another man in public. It's not my husband. So this is these three deities. So this principle here is offering of one's dear objects. So as I mentioned, there are specific objects, but Krishna tells Uddhava, he says, if objects which are much desired and which are very dear to a person are offered to Krishna, then such gifts will give permanent results to that donor. So this person, that was a very dear object to him, so he offered his wristwatch. So there's a commentary here. It says that not only should one offer one's objects of one's own liking, which are very dear to oneself, but one should also offer such things like gunja, a small shrub bearing red and black berries. And a garland of the seeds of these red-black berries is called gunja mala. And should offer peacock feathers, which are very dear to Lord Sri Krishna. So this is one of the principles of offering things, one's dear objects. And of course, this is talking about objects, not food. This is an important point. It's talking about objects like necklaces and garlands and clothing and watches. Because some people of different countries might say, well, my dear object is Priya Pizza. Pizza is very dear to me. So it says in Nectar Devotion, you should offer Krishna one's dear objects that you like very much and desire very much. So I like very much, so I offer this. So it's a devotional principle. They can bend like this. But this verse is not talking about food. It says Upaharanam. It says Nija Priya Upaharanam. And Upaharanam is not food. It's objects. Other places it talks about offering the food that Krishna likes to eat. Like they say, there's a phrase, you dress to please others, you eat to please yourself. Because if you had it your way, you would just walk around on a gumsha. You know, or a lady, or whatever. But okay, I'm married, I'm a Hindu lady, or whatever, I have to wear a sari, this, that, blah, blah, blah. I just like to wear, you know, a pair of shorts and a t-shirt, or what, you know, whatever. Just like, you know, but to please others and to maintain the social decorum, then one dresses accordingly. It's a hot day, and you know, everyone wants to take off their shirt and this and that, but it's not acceptable in certain situations, so then it's not done. At inconvenience, to please others and to maintain the balance in society, then one wears appropriate clothing. But when we sit down to eat, how do you bowl? You eat what you like, generally. So this Krishna, we offer Krishna the foods that he likes to eat and dress him in the clothes that pleases us or whatever also pleases him. Just like in Mayapur, because the devotional realization of the Pujaris is such that, of course, this is after Prabhupada's disappearance from this world, but the Pujaris had the realization that Krishna is always surrounding himself. He likes very much. Krishna actually follows this principle. He eats to please himself, and he dresses to please others. So when Krishna dresses, he dresses to please Radharani. So he wears a yellow dhoti, because that's Radharani's color, Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi. And he thinks, this Pitambara dhoti is surrounding me, and this yellow effulgence is surrounding me. I'm surrounded by Radharani. If I can't be surrounded directly by Radharani from moment to moment, at least when I'm separated from her and I'm walking in a goshta with the cows, I can think, oh, this beautiful yellow color is surrounding me. And this yellow effulgence is coming off my dhoti and reminding me of the yellow jyoti of Radharani. And reminding me of Radharani. Then around my hips, I decorate my hips with a silk kummerbund. Kummerbund is a red silk cloth that I tie around my hips in a very fancy way. And this I also do to please Radharani, because this is the color of her anurag. Her anurag completely binds me. So I tie this around my waist and my hips, because Radharani's intense loving attachment has bound me completely. So these two colors, so I wear these two colors every day. Every day I wear a yellow dhoti pitambara vastra. Pitambara dhoti, and every day I wear this red, bright red kummerbund around my hips and part of my lower waist. So understanding that Krishna is dressing like this, and this is how he dresses to please Radharani and to remind himself of Radharani, then the Pujaris in Mayapur, every day at Sringar Arti and throughout the whole day of Darshan, Madhav, Radha Madhav Kunjavihari, the deity Madhav wears some shade of yellow. If you've ever noticed, I don't know if you paid attention. In Mangalartik, he'll have different colors, maybe according to the day, I'm not sure. But Mangalarti will have different colors. But for the daytime pastimes throughout the day, what you call 7:15 Sringarati, he'll have whitish yellow or orangey yellow, or it's always some type of gold or yellow. And I had noticed this years ago when I was going there regularly. And I said, there's something funny here, I have to inquire. So then I inquired from the Hepajarya. He says, I see that every day Madhav has yellow dhoti. Is this am I correct in what I'm seeing, or is there some fault in my vision? I said, yes, every day he has some yellow. I said, is there some reason for this? And then Jananivas went on to say, yes, it's like this, you know. This is Radharani. Krishna doesn't want to be separated from Radharani. And so we had this understanding, so we dress Radharani every day like this. But that's called Bhav Marg. Of course, it's a blend of Archan Marg, because it's an institutional deity established by the founder Acharya, at least the small deities, and then later the larger deities. And so there are institutional considerations of Vidhi and rules and regulations of Archan Marg, but there is some latitude for implementation of Bhav Marg also, individual realizations and feelings of the worshipper, Bhav Marg. Because as far as Archan Marg goes, addressing the Lord or offering the Lord what he likes or addressing what pleases him, an Archan Marg, they describe, there's particular colors that the Thakurji should wear every day, and he does. In the temples of Vrindavan and also the temples of Radhakund, they follow this principle. So therefore, if you like to see Krishna a particular color, it's really easy to see him in that color. Because let's go through the days and then the colors. So Monday is Somvar. These colors are related to the universe and related to the planets and related to the stars and all these things, planetary rulers. The first day is Monday. And traditionally, ladies especially, because they're so colorful, like to pretend to be colorful. And they wear so many colors, variegated colored clothes. But and often Vedic ladies, they'd wear the same color as the deity. Because they vibrate in harmony with the particular ruling god of that day. There's many things about this, but at any rate, this Monday. Monday is called Somvar. This is the day ruled by the moon. Som means moon. Somaras, the moon. So Monday, of course, the moon is white, and the gem for Monday is moti or pearl. So the deities on Monday are dressed in white, and sometimes they can get by with silver also, but generally white. And you can move around with white, cream white, this white, gold white, but white, primarily. Then Tuesday is Mars Day, and Mars Day is, gem, planetary gem is coral, and of course there's different color, coral, but coral is kind of, it's actually usually pinky type, pink color, like pink quartz. I call it gulabi, pink gulabi, not red gulabi, but pink rose, not a red rose. Pink color, because this represents the Mars planet, and he feels happy. If he sees you wearing that color, then he feels happy. You have my favorite color, nice, have a good day today. This is the idea of why people dress like that. Then Wednesday is Budva. Budva means Mercury. Mercury, of course, is emerald. Emerald is green. So on Wednesday, the deities wear green. Forest green, light green, yellowy green, blacky green, blue green, some kind of green. And they may get so many green outfits, and they'll rotate different green outfits. But that's Wednesday. Thursday is Guruvar, Jupiter. This is yellow sapphire. Yellow sapphire is a planetary gemstone of Jupiter. And the deities were yellow that day. And this is, I always like to see Krishna on this day in yellow, especially these Govindaji and Gopinath, these black deities. And yellow looks like a lightning strike in a monsoon cloud. Looks very beautiful, like Radha and Krishna. So that's yellow. So Thursday is yellow, sometimes gold, some orange, sunburst. They vary, but basically yellow. Friday is Shukravar. Shukravar is Venus. Venus is represented by the gemstone of diamond called Hira, Hiramani. Hira means diamond. So on this day, the deities can be white again like Monday. So if you're on a low budget, you can use the same outfit as Monday. But the actual color would be silver. Silver, white with lots of silver sequins or silver jari, or actual silver cloth and maybe some gold things. And it should be silver. Sometimes they make like crystal type cloth and these kind of things. Friday. Then Saturday is Shanivar. Shanivar is Saturn. And Saturn, his gemstone is blue sapphire, dark blue, neelam, blue sapphire. So Prabhupada talked about this in the early days, about this, and then the devotees, and generally the deities were black or dark blue. Prabhupada was asked by the devotees, can we dress the deities in black on Saturday or any day? He said, oh, black is not so good. You can use dark blue, navy blue, dark blue, navy blue on Saturday. I'd sometimes use brown. They also use brown, dark brown. But it should be blue. Black, very dark blue. Although sometimes use light blue, like this color, like she has. This color blue, like that lady. Light blue. But some blue. Darker blue is better. Like blue sapphire, usually dark blue. Then we have Sunday. Sunday is Surya. And Surya's gemstone is ruby. I think it's called Padma Marga, I think is the name, Sanskrit name for ruby. Ruby is like blood red. And the sun is, so it should be like fire engine red or red type. Wedding dress red or something, really red. So that's it. That's the 7 days, the seven planetaries. So these colors, one would dress it. Usually, you'll see it, Radhakund, the standard is there. Then you might get tripped up. You might say, oh, it's Wednesday, the deity should have green. And you go and they have dark blue. They have dark blue or maybe black. Then you know that it is Amavasya. Because on Amavasya, then the deities wear like Saturday, black or dark blue. So then again, you get a double here. You save some money. Well, Amavasya is once a month, one day a month, and they can use one of your Saturday outfits, which they do. Then Purnima. Haribo, Purnima. What color do you think they'd have in Purnima? White. Same as Monday. So maybe Wednesday again. Oh, I want to see, today's Wednesday, he's going to wear green, it looks so nice and green. I go, oh, they're wearing white. Hey, what? Oh my God, it's Purnima. So this is, another thing about this, this is how devotees would tell the day of the week. Because there wasn't calendars and wristwatches saying Monday, Tuesday, 21, 29, this, that. And the temple was the focus. They knew what time it was by the bell ringing. They knew what day it was by what cloth the deities were wearing. So what more do you need to know? You know the day and the time. Because the temple bell would be the biggest bell in the town. The church bell. So 1 o'clock, and every day it would ring. It's 2 o'clock. Bong! Bong! Like on college campuses, I don't know. I went to a school. The school I went to was established in 1766. A really old school. Ivy League, or whatever you want to call it. That's old school. I mean, the school was established during the British rule of America. You know, America became free from the British in 1776. It was a really old school. So it had this big bell on the campus, so we used to know what time it was. Dong! Was in the church. Dong! A huge bell. It was like, I don't know, 8 feet in diameter. Bell metal. Huge. It must cost like 10 lakhs or 20 lakhs or something. Huge. Sounding so beautiful. So this is offering the Lord one's dear objects.